everybody. Welcome to Buzzing About Romance. I am Leah, and on this episode, I am giving you a quick shot of romance author spotlight edition. And on this author spotlight, I am joined by my co-host, Amanda. Hi, Amanda.
Hello.
And we are welcoming author Nalini Singh. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Nalini Singh is the New York Times bestselling author of the Guild Hunter series, which includes most recently Archangel's Ascension. I cannot speak words tonight. I'm so sorry. She is also the author of the Psy-Changeling Trinity novels, including Atonement Sky, Primal Mirror, Renaissance Surge, Storm Echo, Last Garden, Alpha Knight. So before we talk Archangel's Eternity, that was wrong. Let's get to know you a bit. I'm not saying those words at all the rest
just
of the night.
Just say eternity.
So what initially drew you to romance as a writer?
It's hard to go back that far because I came into writing from being a reader. I think like a lot of writers. Mm-hmm. And I've always been a voracious reader my whole life. And I was reading... At one point, I decided to read the entire children's section of the library when I was young, like literally go shelf by shelf.
And oh, really? Like A through Z?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that's how much I read. And then, as I got older, I got into fantasy mm-hmm. and science fiction. And then I got to that age, I suppose, 13, 14, and started to like romances because my... a couple of my aunts were really into romance novels, especially like the Mills and Boone. You know, like the contemporary category romances. And mm-hmm. so I would just pick those up and start reading. And back then they were like not spicy like they are now. So mm-hmm. it was all emotion. Like the whole thing was, and they were very dramatic. Yeah, like one of my favorite romances, which I still have, this really old edition, is it's basically about this nurse who goes to an island and then there's a... there's, you know, a dramatic, brooding, rich hero, except she's got a brain tumor. And, so there's all this drama and he doesn't know that she's going to die. And there's this love story. It's a fantastic book. I would still recommend that book. But I think, honestly, looking back, I think it was probably the emotional aspect mm-hmm. of things that drew me. Mm-hmm. Just that punch of emotion that you get in romance, I think it's hard to find in that same way in other genres,
mm-hmm.
but I've also always really loved fantasy and science fiction as well, which is why I ended up writing most of my work is paranormal romance or mm-hmm. urban fantasy romance. So it's like a mashup of those things that I loved. Yeah.
Well, so that takes place at, like, the next question, because why fantasy was going to be the next one, but now we know.
Now we know.
So when you're writing,
I love world building and stuff. Sorry, mm-hmm. I love world building. Yeah. And I remember reading Anne McCaffrey's Pern series with dragons, and I was obsessed. And I was like, I could imagine this world, and I could imagine being a dragon rider, and all of these things. And I think that instilled in me, not knowing at the time, because I'm quite an instinctive writer, but I think it instilled in me like a deep-rooted love for building worlds that are so immersive, you feel like you could live in them. Yeah.
So your worlds are fairly complex in the way that you create them. Now, when you're creating these worlds, do you base them on real places, or are they complete like imagination?
Well, we're for getting the most part, New York in this one a lot. So, but then a new New York.
Yes. Yeah. So for the most part, to the present day, I've written alternate Earth.
Okay.
Story. So my Psy-Changeling series, for example, began in San Francisco in 2079. And it's a world that had three different races, like shapeshifters and telepaths, and then we had the humans. And with the Guild Hunter series, you know, it is an alternate New York, which is present day. It's never dated. It is always present day New York. And but it happens to be a New York that has an archangel as a ruler, and you see angels flying overhead when you go past along the street, and there's vampires. And so, yeah, I suppose alternate Earth is what I've done to date.
Is there any rituals or habits that help you stay focused while you're writing?
I've actually been very careful not to ritualize
Okay.
things because when I started writing, I was studying full time and then I was working full time. So it was very important to me to be able to sort of snap into writing mode and not need a particular setup
Okay.
or a particular feel. So I've written like sitting in, I wrote a whole novella sitting in an airport floor, while my flight was delayed. And I used to write on the bus.
Okay.
And the only thing that I do really like, and I have done for a long time, is I'll put in my headphones and I'll have rain sounds.
Okay.
So I really like the sound of rain. I always have. I was born in Fiji, and I remember the sound of, there's a lot of tin roofs there, and I remember the sound of rain, the
I
tropical rain
love rain
falling on
on a
the
tin
tin.
roof.
It's beautiful. It's such an amazing sound. And so I have purchased albums that are just rain sounds on different things, like rain in the city and rain against your window. And so that is probably the closest thing it is. And because I do it so often, once I put the rain sounds in, it just does get me in the zone very quickly. And it is very portable, right? I can do that anywhere. I have my little headphones or my phone and go.
Now, here's a question though. When it starts raining and you're not trying to write, do you kind of get in that mode? Like if you're just sitting around listening to it?
It is very inspiring. Or I'll read, like that's also for rain, because it's funnily enough, so we've had it's funny you just mentioned that we weren't going to talk about weather, but I'm going to talk about
No,
weather.
that's great. I love that you're the one bringing it up.
No, so Auckland, so we're now just going into autumn.
Okay.
And we've had this very strange summer, but we haven't had a lot of rain. And so just this past couple of days, it started to rain. And I've just been like, this is wonderful. And other
You're
people
so
are like, oh my God,
inspired.
It's raining. And I'm like, yeah, this is great. I got actual real rain sounds outside my window, and it's been good fun.
No, it's funny because so in January, I live in Pennsylvania in the States, and in January we had this giant blizzard, and like so every episode that we have had since then, like we have talked about like what the weather is doing, and it's like now it's just become kind of like the shtick. I keep joking, people come for the books, they stay for the weather.
No, you've had a lot of snow over there, because obviously I work with a lot of people from the US, and so I keep up to date with the weather. I'm just like, some of it looks beautiful, but I'm sure
Oh,
it's not
it is
nice living
gorgeous. It's so pretty, but it is the worst. Like, so
in it.
my dog, it was up to like his stomach, and he's an Aussie collie, so he's not really a small dog. He's like a mid-sized dog, but he couldn't walk in our yard. It was so deep. And like where I'm at, like we don't always get that much snow. So it was like my kids were home for like a week and a half, and it's like, oh man. It was very pretty, but I was done with it. Is there a piece of advice that present author you would give past author you?
When I talk, when I'm asked to do talks, especially for newer writers or younger writers, I always say to trust your voice as a writer. And I think I've actually always believed that, but I think I probably hadn't verbalized it in that way when I was younger. So I would just reiterate that to my younger self, to just, even when it's hard, to believe in my voice, in who I am as the writer and the stories I want to tell.
How do you balance, as a writer, the development of the romantic relationships with the other elements of the story? Because your stories are fairly complex.
So as I said, I'm quite an instinctive writer, so I tend to I tell myself the story, and in the first draft, quite often it's very much the romance emotional beats.
Okay.
Not just the romance, but also the other relationship beats that go with the story. And the way I write, my world building tends to be, what do you see through the eyes of the character whose head you're in? I find for me that creates a much more natural world because I'm not trying to info dump a ton of stuff about the world. Like, I might know that stuff, but the character in that, for example, in Angel's Blood, we begin with Elena in an alley in New York, and it's like, you know, a dark alley, and she's out to get a vampire. And I just kind of drop you in it and just go with Elena, and you learn as she sees stuff. And that works for me, and that's kind of how I write as well. And I find the balance comes naturally that way if I focus on the character and the relationships and then the world around them. Obviously only works if it makes sense in the context of who these characters are. So for example, in the Guild Hunter world, when she goes up to the top of the tower roof, there are no railings because an archangel has wings,
right?
And they don't, that's annoying for them to have a railing, right? Like, they don't really care about a human. I mean, oh, you know, maybe you fall off. Like, they don't really care.
Maybe you'll fall off.
So it's like, that's how I balance things. It's what makes sense in the context of who these people are. And the other thing is, I do multiple drafts. So that first initial draft where I'm telling myself the story, it is very rough. It is very much me getting to know the characters, getting to know the world. And then I go back and I layer it in, layer by layer by layer. And for me, that just works really, really well. And I have difficulty believing how other people do it otherwise. But I have very good friends who write these really complex, wonderful books full of fantasy world building. And they literally just do one chapter and it's done. And then they do the next chapter and it's done. And by the time they get to the end, the book's done. And I'm like, how are you doing that? And they, at the same time, look at me and be like, we don't know how you do it, because you just look like you have no plan. You're just off into the wilderness. But, you know, honestly, it probably takes us around the same time to write the book. So, yeah, I like drafting, and I love editing. So I love adding in more layers of story and also deleting, you know, just because I'm like, well, this is a great scene, but actually it doesn't need to be here in this particular story. I might still share it with readers later on as like a deleted outtake.
So you said you're very instinctive, but do you have an idea of like where you want the story to start and where the story to end, and then kind of fill it in? Or is it just like you just let yourself like flow as you're writing?
So I do generally have the culmination in mind as well. Quite often where I begin the initial draft is not where I end up. Like, then I might start actually way ahead of where you will actually see in chapter one. So I might have written like three chapters before that and then decided to take those three chapters out because that was just me getting into the story. And then we begin the book on chapter one, which is the
chapter
one where,
like four.
But I also always, because I write series, I think it's really important to know where the series is going. So it's really important to me to actually map out the series arc. So I think sometimes when I talk about being an instinctive writer, people think that I'm just kind of going off into the wilderness the entire time. But I do a lot of work on the series arc because I think it's really important, especially because I write long series, that everything hooks together. And as a series reader myself, I love finding Easter eggs in books that are like three books ahead. And then it's like, it comes to the point you're like, oh, the clue was there all along. And I like doing that kind of stuff. I like everything sort of like the Guild Hunter series, you know, it's going to be 18 books. It's finished. It's a completed series. And I hope that when readers start from one and go to 18, everything will just link up and then have this really satisfying feeling of, oh, I went on this amazing journey with these characters in this world and she was taking us somewhere, you know, like I it wasn't aimless, And so it's really important for me to do the background acts. And I find once I do that, writing the each of the books is easier because I don't go off on tangents. I know what needs to happen for the act. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite trope to read or write?
To read, I do like Friends to Lovers. I do like that. And is this Cinnamon Roll Heroes? You considered a trope? I do like the cinnamon rolls.
I mean, not really a trope, but that's okay. You can like that.
But in terms of writing, I'm not really a trope focused writer. So when for example marketing is like, oh, what tropes to use and stuff, we have to go backwards to see what's in the book that I that could be used. You know, I haven't sat down and thought I'm gonna write a enemies to lovers or that kind of book. I tend to just
write the book and then pick the tropes
write the
after.
book and then figure out what the tropes were.
And I tell every author that I do these with, like, these are my favorite piece of the podcast, because every author, like, you have a point A, you have a point B, the result is the same, it's a book, but everybody's like journey is different. Like, some people pick the trope and write the book straight from that. Like, clearly, like, you write the book and then have to dig for the tropes, which is fine. Like, there's no one size fits all process. And I think that is one of the most fascinating things about the writing world is, like, everybody does it differently. Some people might have similar, like, ways of doing things, but each individual person creates that story differently. But at the end of the day, they have finished a novel, and it is amazing because that is quite a feat and accomplishment.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that. And also, I think sometimes as writers, we don't realize that there are certain tropes we go back to again and again until a reader points it out.
Yeah, and so, I would say yours is found family.
Yes, I was just going to say that a reader told me that. And I was like, actually, that's what I like to read as well.
Yeah.
You asked about tropes. I didn't say that, but it is, when I think back, I'm like, most of my favorite series have that found family.
I love a found family.
Yeah. Amanda's
just something
right.
about it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I always put down, like, when I try to shelve my books when I read them so I remember what I'm talking about. But I always put yours are always found family, almost always. So
what are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? Let me see. I'm sort of in between because I just finished a couple of things I was reading. So I finished Devaney Perry's Shield of Sparrows. It's a romantasy. I just finished that. And I'm reading, actually, it's like more literary fiction. It's Kiran Desai's The Loneliness of Sonia and Sunny.
Okay.
It's this enormous book about family and change across the generations and stuff like that. It's very intricate and beautiful. And then on audio, I am listening to, I know what I'm going to be reading. I just got it, which is Olivia Waite. She writes a series, and I think this is only the second one, and it's like mysteries on a space station. And they're really cool, and I can't, the name has just escaped me, but they're really good books. Like, if you look up her name, and I'm really looking forward to that because the first one I enjoyed so much because it is a closed room mystery, right? Like, where are you going to go?
That's interesting. I do like a spacey romance.
Yeah.
So, and also I have a whole bunch of stuff. Oh, and I just finished Ilona Andrews' The Inheritance as well. So,
I love it. I love it so much. Yes. I'm a big fan.
They're such fantastic writers. Mm-hmm. And So yeah, really eclectic, and probably have about 5 or 6 things going at the same time.
I mean, I typically am listening to one to two books and reading 1 to 2 books all at the same time, which it is amazing to me with my scatterbrain how I keep them straight.
Do you read thrillers too now that you're You're writing in the thriller world. Is that something you'll read when you're writing, or do you wait to read that after you're not writing it?
So I've always actually read thrillers for a long
Okay.
time. And I think you can see a little bit that even in the Guild Hunt world, there's usually a mystery in there.
Yes.
It's just that the killer is a vampire, you know, instead of a human. So yeah, I do read a lot of thrillers and mysteries as well. I went through a last year I went through this phase where I just read like British set police
Oh.
procedurals for like a couple of months, and it was fantastic. It's a very different style to like an American style thriller, and I really enjoyed them. And then I've been looking for thrillers that are about families recently, but I waited until I wrote my one, which was Such a Perfect Family.
Yeah.
And I'm just fascinated by those dynamics. So I've been reading, I read one called The Inheritance recently about this very wealthy family with this patriarch who kind of manipulates everyone with the wealth, you know, and obviously someone's going to die. And then they're on a Scottish island for this
Oh, interesting.
family retreat. And then again, it's like a closed room because it's this cut off island. And so that was really good. So yeah, I've been reading all kinds of different mysteries. I do like things that are a little bit left of center and or like new locations. I do like those Norwegian, Icelandic, Scandi noir books as well. They tend to be very, very dark. So I can only do them
Every once in
in
a
little
while.
bits. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then I have to have the cozies in between. Like I really like Vivian Chien's Noodle Shop Mysteries.
Oh,
And
yeah.
Lana Lee is like I love her, would never invite her over because somebody's gonna die. So I love those. Like, you know, so I like to break it up. So I can't do constant darkness when I'm reading. I need some
You need them
leavening.
to
Yeah.
blend.
Yeah.
Like I will go into like a dark phase, and that like all I read is like dark or morally gray heroes and all those things. And I'm like, I really need to come back out of that and come back to the light for a little bit. So I get it. So let's chat Archangel's Eternity. It's the Guild Hunter novel book 18. It is the Yes.
final book. It comes out May 5th, 2026. It is PNR slash urban fantasy, and the tropes are found, family, fated mates, immortality versus humanity, and redemption. But this is like the culmination. This is the final book. What was it like writing this book? It was, I think the word bittersweet
Yeah.
is the best. It was really hard in that it's sad to know that this might be the last time I spend this amount of time with these characters. But at the same time, I knew this was going to be the last book from several books ago.
Yeah.
And it feels right, and I'm really proud of what the book is, and I'm really happy with this ending. But at the same time, I cried a lot
Yeah, I
with the
can't even
characters, and
imagine.
also, yeah. And because when I started the series, it was really important to me to look at immortality with, look at the costs of immortality as well, because I think quite often we read books and it's kind of like a fantasy version of immortality. You become immortal and then that's the
Hunky
end of the
dory.
story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I wanted it to be the beginning of the story. And it really comes home in this book because we have Lena, who is, and this is not a spoiler because it's in the blurb, but she's 1,000 years old. And which means that all the people she knew in her mortal life, if they chose not to become like a vampire or, you know, carry on, that they're gone. And
Yeah.
so there was a lot of grief in
Yeah.
this book. But at the same time, I think it's important to look at that from the perspective of someone who has lived these lifetimes and has worked really hard to hold on to her humanity through it all. Because the other thing about the series I wanted to address is, how long do you live before you lose it? Like you lose that humanity and you become really inhuman and really cruel. And like I said, like when it begins, Raphael is like, well, you know, she could fall off a
He's
roof.
on the verge of losing
He's
his
not,
humanity.
yeah, he's not human in any sense of the word, you know. And so their journey has been together, his from the edge of something very dark, and hers to this whole different existence. And so writing this book, you know, there's a lot of emotion, a lot of emotions. And for me as well, you know, I had in my personal life, I was going through things, and so it all came together, and it was actually the perfect book to write at the time. And so yeah, there was it was cathartic too, but also sad and also beautiful. Like I love these characters so much. I've lived with them for over 15 years, and it was, yeah, it was a great journey. And I honestly, if I could have kept writing the series, there's so many things I could have kept doing, but I felt like I always wanted to give these characters an ending. Like I didn't want it to be an endless kind of series, so I'm really pleased with that. So yeah, I think, yeah, rounding up my really long, rambling answer, bittersweet is still the perfect word. Yeah.
I mean, I am typically not a crier. I do not cry.
She's
For
a
the most
robot.
part, I am kind of. But I
She's
can tell
kidding.
you, last year, Archangel's Ascension was my favorite book last year, hands down, bar none. Like, I bawled my eyes out. Like, I just cried that entire book. And you probably could have like ended right there, and I would have been okay. Look, I'm already crying. Just even thinking about it. But you set it up so beautifully. So like, it could have ended right there probably, but I loved the way you brought it back around to Elena and Raphael, and just seeing them go from the very beginning to this ending, and the themes that you have, like how they've grown, how they've lost people, how they've honored people, how they've changed. We get to see some other characters get redemption arcs. We see new relationships, and the way you time jump, even just from the last two or three books, and how you make it play out, that we get to see all of these people that we have loved for years just have a perfect ending. Like, it was, yeah, no, I can't talk.
Thank you for that. Yeah, no, that's what I want readers to feel, that it's been worth the journey to be with me all this way, because I never take that for granted. I mean, an 18 book series is a big commitment, and a lot of the readers have been with me for like over a decade, and I want them to feel like you do, Amanda. I want them to feel like it's been a ride, you know, it's been this incredible adventure. And you know, the whole point of the story is that we have all these emotions and we do experience them over our lifetimes. And it just so happens that Elena and Raphael have experienced them over an immortal lifetime. And you know, how does that change things? How does it change you as a person? And yeah, so it's been fascinating to write the series from a writing perspective. To take that initial idea I had about questioning immortality and the cost of immortality and bringing it to this final closure, which is why it had to end with Elena and Raphael, because it began with Elena and Raphael. So it was a really nice full circle moment. But yeah, there's a lot of tears, a lot of tears. I will cry too, because I'm having a launch in New Zealand. For this final book at one of my favorite bookstores, and Like literally, I will be there with the tissues because when I start talking about it, I'm sure that I will be like, the makeup's gonna be running. I better get the waterproof
Yeah.
mascara, you know.
Do you have in this series, do you have a favorite book?
Oh no. I heard another author say this once and I really like it, and it said, and they said that whichever book I'm writing at the time is the favorite, and it, that's how it should be, because I think we sh every book deserves that obsession from the writer's point of view. So I have loved every single book I've written, and I am incapable of putting, you know, sending anything to my editor that I don't love. So I have been late with books. I have had extensions because I just decided it wasn't working and I started again. Or I once got 80,000 words into a book and I decided no, and I started again. So so yeah, no, I have genuinely loved, and I think with a series like this where we've got a continuous storyline, so it's the same characters coming up over and over, not just the main protagonists, but like the people around them. They are beloved to me, all of them. And so there is no, for me, it's a, I know they're written in books, but it's in my head, it's a continuous timeline. So it is like lifetimes I've spent with these people, and there's no way for me to pick a particular moment in this timeline that
Well,
is
especially,
better.
I mean, since you've been invested in this, because the first book was published in 2009, so it's like this has been a big chunk of time.
It is, yeah.
So, aside from the last one, because I'm assuming that was a difficult one to write just because of the nature of the book itself, was there another book in the series that was hard to get the ending to, or?
Let me see. So there was a book where it's a prophecy, which ended with what readers were really mad about, which was a cliffhanger. But I didn't think it was a cliffhanger. So I had this whole discussion with my editor. I'm like, I don't think it's a cliffhanger. She's like, it's a cliffhanger. But I'm like, but you know, it's like there's like a thing that happens in the end. I don't want to spoil it in case someone reads it. But so anyway, that one, I think I didn't question it until after it was out and everyone was really mad. And I was like, but why are
But that
you
was not
mad?
the intention. I hate a
So
cliffy.
yeah, there was a that sometimes I think yeah, sometimes I think in my head I have done something and then it's not quite, I suppose in that book it didn't quite come across as what I thought it came across as. So that was interesting. And yeah, I'm trying to think through the books. Like I said, it's such a continuous timeline. I think Dimitri's book was hard, Archangel's Blood. It's such a, there is, again, there's so much grief in that book as well, and so much darkness. And it was almost like, how do I not redeem him, but how do I make him find his own humanity again after he's,
Explain and explain to
yeah.
everyone why he is the way he is, because he
Yeah.
comes off really rough in the first few books or in the
Yeah.
first book. Like
Yeah.
he's just, yeah, you wonder, and then he's been through so much. So it's
Yeah. And the funny thing is, I think because so originally I never intended this to be a series.
no.
So yeah, I was pulling absolutely no punches in any of these characters. Like I never had any idea I would write Ilium's book, or I would write Dimitri's book, or I would write Nasir's book. So I was just like, they can be as bad or as good or as wild as they have to be, you know, for the story. And I think they really helped me because it's like they are who they are.
And they
And
are
I,
so distinct.
they
Like
are
they are
so
so
distinct.
distinct.
This was just going to be like a one book like shot.
This is kind of legendary.
My gosh.
So I read the Side-Changeling series, which is even longer than this series.
Yes.
And at the time, I was writing two Side-Changeling books a year. And I had just gone, I think, full time as a writer. I can't quite remember if it was a couple years before. And I was like, okay, I can actually write a third book. I can write three books a year. That's okay for my schedule and for my own personal writing pace. So, but I thought, well, I'm already writing this long-running series. I don't want to write another long-running one. Like, I should have single titles, like just standalone books. So Angel's Blood began as a standalone book.
Oh my goodness.
And so I wrote this and I sent it to my agent. And she came back and said, Cindy, who is my editor, is going to want the second book. And I was like, no, but like it's one. But I knew in my heart that it was not one book. But I was trying to convince everyone, but I was already writing the second book because I had accepted my fate at that
My
point.
goodness.
So that was so this is when I learned that I'm really, really not good at writing just standalones when it's like a fantasy
18
urban
books
fantasy
later.
world building. So that was my attempt. I will say that I have successfully written standalones in my thrillers because I wrote the first one and people said, oh, are these kind of characters gonna come back in the next book? I'm like, no, like my brain capacity, it's already got two long-running series. The thrillers have to be completely standalone.
Well, even the rugby books. I mean, I know they're slightly related, but those stand alone really well too, though. Yeah, so.
Those are good because they're just connected by people, so the family relationship,
Oh, it's like an
you don't have to read
interconnected
them.
series.
So instead of like a really tight, like with the Side-Changeling and the Guild Hunter, I do know people who've dipped in and out, but in general, most people agree that you need to read them in order to get
I don't
the
know how. Like,
No, Amanda doesn't read anything out of order. Like, we'll throw, like, for the
I don't like to.
podcast, we do like Wednesday episodes where we call them Sip and Discuss. And every once in a while, we'll pick a book where it's like third or fourth in the series. And she's like, why do you do this to me? Because, like,
Yeah, see,
I read the other
I don't get
ones.
it either. I don't get it. I'm like you, Amanda. I need to go back to the beginning.
And
See,
I've been in the Side-Changeling since early days. So I could not imagine dipping into one of those later books and being like, what?
I used to be like that. I used to have to read things in order, but I don't even read my books like in order anymore. Like I will hop around in a book and I will read like three chapters, then skip like six chapters ahead and then go
No,
back or go forward. Like
no.
I will read an entire book completely out of order just because like I so like series order for me, it means nothing anymore.
The funny thing is, I can write that way. I quite often will skip ahead. Like I don't have to write in linear order. If I know the ending, I'll write the ending, and then I'll go back and write the middle or like write this random scene. Like I don't. If I'm stuck in a point, I don't try and belabor
You
that.
just keep going.
I just keep going. So I can write that way because, but I can write that way because I'm putting the jigsaw together in my head. But I can't read that way because the book's already written. So, Leah,
Yeah, but
what are you doing?
sometimes you get into a book and you're like, oh, I don't know if I like this. So let me skip ahead and see if it gets better. And then you read a part and then it's like, oh, they're referencing something that already happened. I have to go back and see what happened
No,
and see if it's worth
no.
it. And sometimes then you like read that and you're like, eh, I'm not so sure again. So you skip farther ahead. I know, it's a thing. I have problems. I accept it. I'm okay with it. We refer to it as Leah-ing a book.
Yes.
Like it's a verb now. Yeah, I don't know. I started doing it probably 6 or 7. It might have been longer than that,
I
but
think it's probably about a year
it's
now,
probably
maybe,
been about a
right?
year. Yeah, and it was just one of those things where I started jumping around and I'm like, I still get the gist of it and like I enjoy it, so I'll just keep on doing it. I actually haven't done it for a couple weeks.
She's
But
funny.
it's my thing.
I do have a question too, when we talked about difficult books. Did you have one that was the most fun to write? Because you have so many fun characters in the series. Like,
Yeah, they're what I love writing both these series is there's fun characters in every book, you know, like because it is an interconnected world, I can it might not be the whole book might not be really funny or whatever, but you will have these moments that that are necessary for the book. But also just I just love seeing these particular characters or seeing this interaction. And so in terms of a book, I have to say Nasir's book was quite unique because
He is
he's
unique.
just he's hard to describe. He is just very much himself and he sees the world through a different lens. And so writing that book, it was great fun.
I think his is so much fun to me, and then Titus is always like
Yes,
my
he's
most
hilarious.
fun. Like if he's
I
on the page, like I'm grinning from ear to ear. Like every time I see his name, I'm just like, Titus is here. Like
Amanda,
he's like, oh, I love him.
do you have a favorite book in this series?
It's probably Ascension. Just, I mean, I love so many of them for so many reasons, but I think Ascension was just there's a part where like all of the seven are like coming together and talking about Ilium ascending, and it's and not with I don't want to spoil anything, but he's you know they have these really deep emotional moments between all of them, especially between him and Raphael, and then just his relationship with Aodin, and I'm like. That book just it broke me and put me back together. Like I was so happy to just get that story. So I think it's my favorite, but I love a lot of them.
So, Nalini, what is next for you?
What is next for me? So I've turned in Cold Redemption, which is the next side-changing book. And my next contracted book is a thriller, but that's not actually due for a while. So right now I'm working on, it's the first time in a long time I've had a chunk of time where I can work on new ideas.
Be fun.
So I'm working on something new. So we'll see where it goes, and it's good fun. And I'm trying to keep that time from being nibbled away by other things. So I am just mostly focused on that, and I'm sure the edits will be coming in for Cold Redemption soon. So I'll do that. But yeah, just working on a new project and hopefully something to share with readers when it's ready.
I was reading the newsletter today, and so you're talking about Cold Redemption, and you started a different couple and had to
I
switch,
did. I did
and now we're
that.
all. I mean, I was in the Facebook group today, and we're all trying to figure out who it is. So, I mean, I know you can't tell me, but I'm very excited.
Yeah, I'm so
Are we
sorry. I've
staying
got
in?
to, my hay fever is just really acting up. Give me 1 minute to go and sneeze and
Oh
come
no,
back.
you're fine.
Okay, take your time. You love her so much.
I do.
Mike has to, you have to take this part out, Mike, for
Oh,
your.
sorry.
We're not really sorry. I was just about to.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. It
Hopefully you can
happens.
edit that out.
That is what Mike Burrier is for. Becky's husband does all of our editing. So honestly, like I was interviewing an author the one day and my phone started ringing because I forgot to put on Do Not Disturb, but I didn't know if it was because my laptop and my phone are connected. So it was like ringing on my laptop and ringing on my phone. And I didn't know if anybody could like hear it. And so I was like freaking out and I'm like, I don't know how to shut it off. So it happens
Mike
and
is used to us.
that he is used to us and our chaos. And sometimes I think he leaves things in just to spite us.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for joining us and chatting all things Nalini Singh with us.
Yes, thank you so much.
No, this was really fun. It was lovely to talk to you both, and you know, particularly Amanda, because she knows the work so well. And just having our little almost cry session together, that was great. Yeah, no. Yeah, I am really looking forward to the release of Archangel's Eternity because I want to talk to readers about it. You know, I want to have these discussions and have these conversations and
Well,
yeah.
in the way Amanda described it, because she finished it before I read it, she's like, it's just like one big giant epilogue. So you can't, there's really nothing that we can talk about because then we spoil everything. I'm like, that's okay. We have other things that we can ask.
Yes. So, but
thank
yeah.
you. Oh, excuse me. Now I'm doing it. But until next time, happy reading, everybody.
Find us on Instagram at Buzzing About Romance or on Twitter at Buzzing Romance. If you like the podcast, please leave a review. If you'd like to support us directly, join the Bookcase and Coffee Patreon and receive exclusive content only available to Patreon members. Check out bookcaseandcoffee.com for our on-the-shelf show notes.